Welcome to Read, Eat, Travel, Repeat, the book club and podcast with your hosts, Sarah, Kit, and Marianne, three friends who talk about all things books, food, and travel.
Welcome, readers, eaters, and travelers to Read, Eat, Travel, Repeat, the podcast and book club where books take us beyond the page. I'm Sarah.
I'm Kit.
And I'm Marianne. Today we'll be talking about Summer in the City by Alex Astor. Spoiler warning for anyone who hasn't read the book yet. While we will be giving initial thoughts and ideas, eventually we will be spoiling the end.
And we will let you know when we get to that point, so feel free to listen up right until then, pause, and then come back once you finish the book. And as always, we are adult readers, and we're definitely going to say adult things.
So, what's going on in all of your lives?
I'm presenting down in Denver tomorrow. By the time you listen to this podcast, it will have been a few weeks ago. But I am presenting at the Hestel Conference, which is for school librarians. I'll be talking about all my favorite horror books and why kids need horror written exactly for them. And then I'm going right from there up to Wyoming, and I'm going to camp for about 4 or 5 days. Go hiking, fishing, see what there is to see. It's my favorite place in the world, so I'm very excited about that. How about you, Sarah?
Well, school is over finally. The only thing I don't have completed is the yearbook, so I will be continuing to proof pages for the next week or so. But that means life is slowing down. Our exchange student leaves on Wednesday, so we're kind of into packing and goodbye mode. So lots of cleaning, lots of reading, not much else. That'll be nice. What about you, Ma?
Tomorrow I am leaving to fly to Los Angeles, which has me a little nervous because of the fact that everything that's going on in Los Angeles right now. But we're getting a car and we're leaving right away to drive to Arizona. I've never been to Arizona other than the airport, so I'm trying to get it off my bucket list and finally see the Grand Canyon for the first time.
Nice.
So we'll spend 2 days in Arizona. Obviously not enough time, but you know, time's limited. And then we're going to drive up to Las Vegas for a couple of days where the projected temperature is 105. And yes, I live in Florida, but we don't usually have triple digit temps here in Florida. And then from there, we're driving back to LA where hopefully everything will have settled down more. And again, if you're listening to this podcast, this is all old news. So, and then I'm doing some Disney related stuff because we know I am a Disney adult. So
yeah,
no shame in that,
especially Walt Disney history. So I'm eating dinner at the Tam O'Shanter, which is one of his favorite restaurants. And I'm sitting at table 31, which was Walt's table.
That's awesome.
And I'm super excited for that. And then also going to Griffith Park has Walt's Carrollwood Barn, which is the shed he used to tinker on his trains with at his home on Carrollwood Drive. And it's in Griffith Park, and it's only open the third Sunday of the month. And I'm going to be there on the third Sunday of the month, so I'm going to finally get a chance to go. And then spending a couple of days at Disneyland with my daughter and her husband, so I'm super excited.
That's awesome.
I haven't been to Disneyland in forever.
I've never been to Disneyland.
Really?
Really. We've talked about going because we're so much closer now that we're in Colorado.
Oh, yeah. Right.
But we just haven't had we ended up going down to Disney World instead over spring break because Longines Horse Show was at WEC that week.
Yep.
So we were like, well, that's two birds in one stone. Like, we'll go down to Disney and Horse Show.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
The thing I really love about Disneyland is its connection to the community. As you know, at Disney parks, the cast members wear a name tag that has their hometown on it. Uh-huh. And if you go to Disney World, those towns are from all over the world.
Yep.
Whereas Disneyland, you see people from that area. And if you start talking to them, their mother, their grandmother worked at Disneyland. I've talked to people who remember seeing Walt Disney in the park.
Oh, that's awesome.
That would be so cool.
You know,
it's a legacy. Yeah. Like people who are there are a legacy. That's really cool.
So it's not just like, it doesn't feel as commercial as Disney World because it has that connection to the community.
Yeah. That's cool. This month's book is Summer in the City by Alex Astor. Let's talk about our initial reaction. What did you guys think?
I started and stopped this book probably 2 to 3 times before I got really into it. And I don't know why. I read the first couple pages and I was like, I just can't, like, I just wasn't getting into it.
Maybe not in the mood.
Yeah.
Like not ready for a summer romance, yeah, kind of.
Something like that. But then like the third time I picked it up. So I got through about, no spoilers, the stairwell scene the first couple times.
Okay.
And then I kept going and then I plowed through it in like an hour and a half. Like, oh, I couldn't get into it, couldn't get into it. And then I was so far all in that when I finished, I was like angry that it was over. So yes. I just had to be in the right mood. And I loved it. I really loved Elle, who's the main character. I've like felt her whole imposter syndrome like vibe. I was like, yes, agree. I understand. Mm-hmm. And forced proximity is one of my favorite tropes. And I thought this book did it like top notch. Just throw those two together and see what happens. So I loved it. What about you?
I finished this book this morning because I've been really into the Boys of Tommen series and I was in the middle of book two and I went, oh my gosh, our book club, we have to read this. And so I read it literally in a day. I'm still in the middle of book two, but this book made my heart so happy. Like, it just was such a super fun, easy beach read. I liked the characters. I like that he kind of was Mr. Grumpy, but it didn't last long.
No, he was like,
you know, like he was grumpy, but he fell first. I feel like he fell first. I guess we don't know that officially. I liked how she, Elle, did not realize that she needed to find herself until she did find herself. Like, she didn't realize what in a bad place she was, mm-hmm, because
she was worried about everybody else.
Yes. And it wasn't written down that way where it was like, I mean, I love it when a character has anxiety. I love all that. But as somebody with anxiety, sometimes books get too into that and it gets a little bit whiny and like, oh, my anxiety. And it's like, no, go on and live your life still. Like,
mm-hmm, right.
And I think she didn't realize how much it was holding her back until it didn't.
Right.
And I liked that. Instead of her being like, I can't. She was trying things and then stopped trying and just did it. And I loved that about it. So
what about you, Ma?
I loved it. I found it was like a nice, a quick, easy read. You know, I'm originally from New York, so I love anything that's set in New York. I love that whole city vibe. It just was like, this is like a happy book, a perfect book for a, mm-hmm, reading. Like, mm-hmm, you said, a beach read, even though it takes place in the city. Mm-hmm. I like the characters. I thought it was really kind of an interesting take on what having money does to your psyche. You know, because it wasn't, mm-hmm, just like just a fluff piece. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. I thought there was some deeper commentary in there too. So my only beef sometimes with the book, and that's the only thing I remember not liking about this, is I feel sometimes when like things like either wrap up too quickly or then when there's not enough time given to the ending, sometimes that, uh-huh, takes away from the book for me. So I felt a little bit like that with this one, but all in all, I would happily recommend it to other people.
Yeah. Yes, for sure. For sure. And the cover's gorgeous.
I think we have different,
and the pages are gorgeous, and the map and the inside.
Mine is this one.
I refer to maps a lot.
Mine is this one. Yeah. And Marianne got it on Libby.
I couldn't decide if I wanted the taxi one or not, but I'm glad I got the city, because the taxis really aren't. They're only in it a few times, but the city is, you know, the city.
Here's my unpopular book opinion. I've come to this realization, and trust me, I had my time when I loved to collect books, but now I look at books and I think, wow, how many trips could I take with all the money spent on those books?
This is true.
So, I mean, that's just where I'm at in my life, that, you know, it's just like, if I could borrow it from the library and not have to pay for it, and that's more money to put in my pocket. So
I'm starting to get more on my Kindle, because I do like to reread. And then if it's something like this, that's super beautiful, then I'm like, okay, that's what I want to have. I don't want to just buy a book to have it. I want like the fancier covers. Or everything that Maggie Stiefvater has ever written. Yeah. So that's another one. I will, certain authors, I'm like, but there's some series I don't own the books. I just have it on Kindle, and that's okay.
I read a fair few on Kindle Unlimited. I kind of balance myself out. If I can get it on Kindle Unlimited, awesome. I'm not supposed to be reading on a Kindle or on a device.
On your Kindle. So
I have to really like force myself to like, don't do that because you don't want to go blind faster.
Yeah, but exactly.
I also, my biggest problem with, and I obviously love a library, I am so impatient that when the mood strikes that I want to read it, and I want to read it right now, because if it comes like 2 weeks from now, maybe I don't want it anymore. So that's where I end up buying books where like I looked and this one was not available on Libby through our library. And it was like, it'll be a week. And I was like, nope, like got to get it right now.
I'm just going to go right now to the store and I'm going to
That's where I end up buying books is I'm like, I'm in the mood at this exact moment and the library doesn't have
it. I think for me, remember we used to get so many ARCs back when we did.
Yeah.
East Sandgarden, that it's hard for me. And now I still have a NetGalley account and so many books on there that I still need to read. So it's hard for me to justify buying a book when I have so many that I still need to read. And when, I don't know, something about when you get something, I want to support authors. So it's not like I'm like, I'm not saying don't buy the book. Because, I mean, trust me, these beautiful edges are like killing me.
Well, the other thing too is when I go to an indie bookstore, then I feel like I have to, I know I don't have to, but I have to buy something because I want to support them. So I kind of feel like my goal is to look for bookshops when I'm in Europe this summer
and that'd be fun.
Specific books in specific languages. Like I want to find The Scorpio Races.
I would kill for that.
In Spanish and in French. I own it in Italian. I bought it. I ordered it from Italian Amazon.
Oh,
I
don't,
because I couldn't find it. I mean, I can get the Spanish one here, but and my Spanish is better than my Italian, so I could probably read it in Spanish.
I couldn't read it
there
in any other language.
Read in Italian.
But it would be cool to have.
There are parts I can read in Italian, but I'm like, okay, but you know, certain books like that that are like for me collector's items that I would like to.
That's why I buy a lot of like antique books when I go to like used bookstores. I'll pay like big money for those, and then any kind of Lord of the Rings special edition. Like that's this whole shelf over here. It goes all the way back.
Your kind of collection of,
Like I have all of those with like the trilogy in one book, each book individually with painted edges, with the original artwork. Like I can't, I couldn't pass it up if I wanted to.
But I think that's kind of cool because it's a collection too. It's not just a read it.
I also have The Decline and Fall of the Roman Empire in its entirety that I bought at a library used book sale. No, I was like, this is going in the library.
This has to.
And I used it once because I was like, I'm so smart. When Gladiator 2 was being announced and they were announcing all the different actors. So like Fred Hechinger was going to be one of the brothers, Joe Quinn, the other. And then I was like, oh, it's definitely in this book. So I like, I pulled out, this is the only time I've ever used it. I pulled them out and did like a whole TikTok series about like, who was Emperor Caracalla? Like, who is he? Who is he? You know, he's going to be played by Joe Quinn. Yep. How did this guy die? And then he ended up not being Caracalla. He ended up being Gaeta. But like I was like, I have these books, guys. Like I got them right here.
You need to go to Rome and go to the Colosseum sometime.
That's our, because
that was
I would love to travel internationally.
It was such a cool thing to go to. That's probably the only thing worth going to Rome for. It's not that I don't like Rome. I like big cities. It's beautiful. Vatican was, I've seen it once. I don't need to go again. But I would go to the Colosseum over and over again. It's just so overwhelming.
I want to go. I haven't traveled at all internationally because we are very like have the money, spend money. Like we're not very good at saving. So like, oh, I have enough money. I'm going to do a road trip here. Like we did a road trip 6 weeks and hit like 17 national parks. Like we could have saved money and done something else, but like, let's do that. Like, so we,
let's do that. Yeah.
That's
where
we kind of fall down on international travel. Like you just have to plan it more. And that's not really our thing. We're more like spontaneous. Like let's go. Road trip.
Well, I only go because I take students. I'm going to be real honest about that. I am just a teacher. I cannot afford to go to Europe every summer, but I can when
you're
I
working.
Take students. So I'm still kind of working, but that's fun. But
that's why same me as a teacher, but I pick up like side hustles here and there. I do after school tutoring. I do like the AP reading that I did this past week, and I do it all so that I have money for traveling.
Yep.
So Of course, too, when you don't have a child living at home anymore and paying for dance classes or traveling to dance competitions, and it frees up a little bit more money for.
Yes. Once my children are gone and I can pay down the debt that we've accrued because of children, things like that, then I'm sure we'll go more. But yeah. Okay. Let's talk about some plot points, some motifs, as we say in the English world, the way we have them written down. We want to do this first one, the money and identity first, because I thought that was a great one.
Well, yeah, because I already kind of referenced it.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
So, but are we going to get into spoilers in this part?
Probably, if you're listening.
Yeah, we probably need to just do the spoiler alert.
A little bit of spoilers for people moving forward.
Yep.
All right. Since we're rolling into plot points, now is the moment. If you have not finished reading this book, take a pause, go get the book. I promise it's worth it. And then come back and you can dig into all these different plot points with us. We are going to start with money and identity. Who's got thoughts?
You know what I was just thinking about?
So many thoughts.
The one I was just thinking about, you know how like that old saying that money is the root of all evil?
Yes.
And then the counterpoint that like lack of money is the root of all evil.
Yes.
And I feel like both of those come into play here.
Uh-huh.
You know, like L views having money as associated with evil because that's what she's experienced.
Uh-huh.
But then she's got the lack of money, which is just as distressing and creating anxiety and her struggles, you know, because she doesn't have money. So money is such a main theme of this, this book.
And I thought what I really liked about it, this kind of gets into some of the other points too, in terms of like with her dad, is I like the way that the author kind of slow rolled out some of these reveals. Like we know that Elle has a thing about money and not wanting her, she's like wanting to stay anonymous. Like she's making money. Like she has money at this point because she sold a couple movies.
She's making good money because she's a screenwriter.
But she doesn't necessarily want people to know it because in her mind, you know, she grew up without a lot of money, she grew up with a dad who used money as leverage and power. She doesn't want people to take advantage of her, but we don't know that at the start. We just know that she's got a real hang up with money and she really doesn't like that Parker has it and throws it around.
It also starts too with her. It's not the money; it's how you get
how you're using it.
Because she wants to do it herself. Yeah. Like, I want to make money and I want to make a lot of money, but I don't want anyone to hand it to me.
And that's the struggle she has. Oh, sorry.
No, therefore, like using an alias to write, then nobody can look at her name, which of course. We know why they don't want her looking at it, but she changes her name. She writes under an alias, but nobody really knows who the alias is. So it took me a while to get the hang up on the money, which I thought was good. Cause you're right. It's the slow release later when you find out why.
The way it was like a big bomb drop reveal. I was like, that's your dad.
Yeah. Well, the other thing I was going to say though too, is the fact that her sister is married to money or spending money and doing nothing quote unquote on her own, that she's just like a kept woman, so to speak. And the fact that she's living in her sister's apartment, which is this like penthouse next door to a billionaire, but she's comfortable there. Yeah. You know, it's not like that kind of makes you wonder because it's not like she's like walking around going, oh my God, I've never seen anything like this. You know, she's not that uncomfortable with it. Kind of gives you a clue that maybe she's not as broke as she thinks she is, that she's more familiar with that lifestyle than she lets on at the beginning.
That she had at one time lived with the money before her dad left. So she knew both sides. And it wasn't until the dad left and the mom refused child support and refused everything that they went into poverty.
And I think your point, Sarah, earlier of like, it's not necessarily the money that's the problem. It's the how did you get the money? So she's making her own money, and if she wants to spend it on, you know, a nice apartment because she wants that house like so badly, but she wants to do it herself. But her sister getting little payouts, so it's like it's not the penthouse, and it's not necessarily it's the money.
Right.
It's how did you get it, and then what do you owe someone who gives you? Like she doesn't want to be in debt to anyone.
No. She found out that her dad paid her student loans, and immediately had them send the money back to him and paid them off herself. So just showing that she just wanted to do it herself. It wasn't, he was probably, yes, throwing his money around, but also being a parent. Like, this is what parents do. You
but
know,
some
I
of
want
it.
To pay for
yeah.
this. And she's but like, fuck some,
but some parents would not let you, would never
right.
let go of that.
Well, and
that's
I think
the
that's right. the, that's where right. she really struggled
that's
with
dad.
Her dad versus Parker, where her dad had said something, I think, when they finally like meet up in the book, he's, after everything yeah. I've done for you, like he wields it mm-hmm. as a weapon, this mm-hmm. money that he has that he's used to pay for things for her when she didn't ask. And he's using it for his own gain. It's not necessarily because he wants what's best for her. He wants what he thinks mm-hmm. is what's best for her.
Yes. Which is what she yeah. says is the issue. Because he's not happy with what he thinks yes. her job is, which is just writing movie reviews, which yeah. that's not a
you're
terrible
making
job.
Money in it. If you like, can make
you're a writer and you're making money, who cares? But it's not
well, and it's
not
that,
big enough for him.
It's that life experience, though, too, that makes her flip out so much at Parker when they first meet yeah. in the stairwell. Uh-huh. Because she thinks he's trying to do to her what her father's done to her.
Yes.
When he says, oh, let me take you on a helicopter ride
yes.
or whatever else. You know, he's trying to use his money to impress uh-huh. her, or she uh-huh. thought he was trying to, like, pay her. But still, that was... That's why she flipped right. out so much
and I
about
think,
it.
Which I agree with. I would have too. I think the way he goes about it. I'm like,
yeah,
you're kind
you
of
don't
asshole.
Know him at all yet. But you're then, just like, oh, you're just throwing your money around?
What would it take? What would it take for you to come
like,
home
what?
With me?
I'd right.
be like, what
maybe
the fuck? What do you
don't
mean,
be an
what
asshole.
yeah.
yeah. But then as you get to learn more about him, you realize that he's like new money. So he doesn't necessarily
yeah.
understand all those nuances
yeah.
yet.
And it seemed like. You know, for him, it was a lot of, I think I put the quote down for later on where basically he was just like, I would pay for this because I like seeing you happy and I have the ability to do
right.
it. Like it's nothing. I'm not asking
yep.
anything in return except for I enjoy seeing you happy. And I can.
It's kind of like if I said I was going to buy you McDonald's and that's going to make you happy. But the problem is on his budget, he can
yeah.
do
the Eiffel Tower.
So much. McDonald's.
He can just buy McDonald's.
A
coffee shop, you know?
Yeah.
You know, so that's the problem, I think, is just his budget is so high that he can do things that are ridiculous. And it seems so over the top. But if you scaled it down and compared it to taking somebody to
yeah.
dinner or, you know, buying
right.
the McDonald's to make them happy, that it's not
which
that
is that is probably one of the thing that made me mad is reading it. And of course you get mad when you read books sometimes,
literally always,
but I kind of wanted to scream at Elle sometimes because I'm like, he's just trying to be nice
right.
to you. How
yes,
do you
right.
see
yeah.
this, you know? But then I'm also like with him, how do you not see that this is not what she needs yeah. for you to be nice? But it's
right.
that's a, I like the money thing because it was two-sided. It was the way he looked at money, but the way she looks at money.
Right. Oh, yeah. I
and
think
that was
that's
really,
a huge and, theme of the book. You
and
know,
he it, just doesn't under... He's like, I feel so bad when he's like, I didn't mean to upset you.
I didn't.
I just was doing
yeah.
something nice. Like, it made you smile, so I bought you this bracelet.
Yeah.
And he's like,
I did
okay,
love
I'm
that
sorry,
part,
you know?
Though, where she was like, yeah, but I was looking at the earrings behind it, or whatever it was.
Yep.
Like, yeah, like,
oh, that's right. At the auction.
Yeah, the ugly mushroom looking yes. bracelet.
Yeah.
And he's like, you smiled at it. She's like, I was smiling at the earrings right above
it. He was like, and he went immediately into like that weird boyfriend fix it mode. He's like, got it. Like went right back and also
yes.
bought the earrings.
Got it. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Which I kind of loved his like social awkwardness being in a relationship. That's part of it too, is like, he's like, I don't know how to be in a relationship, especially when I have money, because.
Right.
He talks about people, his doesn't have a lot of friends from
right.
after he made money because he knows they want something out of him. And that's what she doesn't want anything out of him, but he wants to give it to her and he doesn't understand. Well, you don't want it, so I want to give it
yeah.
to you. What don't
Why
you understand?
Can't you just
she's
take
like,
this awesome thing that I, and like
yeah.
all of the
yeah.
problems, which you wouldn't want these issues to be fixed early on, but like if they had just had like a conversation.
Like, I know.
We wouldn't have had
that's a novella,
we wouldn't have had a book,
a novel.
But like,
oh, no, yeah.
just maybe talk to each other, guys. Maybe a little.
Well, and but then part of her stuff too, which she gets into with their inevitable
yeah.
breakup at the end, because that's always what happens in rom-coms, the going apart and the coming together, is how she talks about not wanting to ride on anyone's coattails either. So it's not just about the money. It's like, I want to be successful on my own reputation, not because I'm with you or not because people think, oh, you got me in the door. That's like super important to her as well. But I feel like she can't separate that from the money either. She can't, she doesn't realize that she could still have money and do that, which I think she does near the end once her identity is revealed and people comment to her, I really loved your stuff. Your movie changed my life. And then she starts to see that you can maybe have both.
Right. But that ties into her imposter syndrome too. Yes. You know, that if they start liking her movie because she's so-and-so, is that it? Is that because she's a good writer or because... It's just like she's riding on someone else's coattails.
I think she's also trying to like stay away from the celebrity side of it. Like she wants the words to kind of live on their own and to get, you know, either accolades or criticism on their own without it being about like, oh my God, but did you see who she's dating?
Yeah. I totally get that.
You know, and I thought about that many times, you know, thinking about as much as, you know, everybody wants to have money, but it must suck so bad sometimes as far as like the lack of privacy and the way that people, you know, it's like if she starts, you know, she's with Parker for real, then everybody's going to be, she's going to, the paparazzi are going to be everywhere. She's going to be, everybody's going to be critiquing her clothing, everything. And that's just got to suck so bad. I was, I used to always remember thinking about that, you know, taking my kids to like Disney World and thinking, you know, somebody like Princess Diana or she can just take, you can't do it. You can't just pop into some place and just relax and have fun. You've got to make all kinds of security arrangements. And like I saw Prince Harry and Meghan took their kids to Disneyland and you know damn well that they had, you know, the VIP tour guide.
Oh, for sure.
Stores were cleared for them. And that's not the same experience as we get.
No.
Like we were at Disneyland, for Kelsey's birthday, like 7 or 8 years ago, probably. And Kim Kardashian's daughter, North, her birthday's right around the same time as Kelsey's. And the Kardashians were at Disneyland and they were in a store right by us. And they had security had cleared the store. So only the Kardashians were in there.
Which, like, on one hand, you understand why it has to be that way. For like security purposes, but on the other hand, it's a totally different, it's not the same thing.
Yeah. And it gets in your way too. If you're like, well, this is when I need to go to the store and we're trying to leave and I want to go get something and now you're closing it because they're more important than me or whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
I've always said I would rather be an author.
Nobody
for that reason, but some authors still can't. I mean, I look at, I would love to have a conversation with Rebecca Yarros about how much her life has changed.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Since Fourth Wing. And like you said, this is not her first book. She's been writing for a long time, but nobody really knew who she was before.
And now it hit.
And now they all do. So now she can't go anywhere without people talking about her and all this.
Just like someday when everybody wants to listen to our podcast, we're going to be celebrities. Yep. We'll have paparazzi.
We're
going to
be celebrities.
Well, I mean, this is like small potatoes in comparison, but for a hot second, I was making a ton of videos on fan expos. Just like... Mm-hmm. Almost how-to videos, like, hey, if you have an autograph with James McAvoy, here's the table. And I would like show people, I would go a day early, like, here's how you get to the table so that you can save time. Because it's like walking into an expo hall, you have no idea where anything is.
Oh, I bet.
So I was making all these like just little videos and like updates and like, hey, ticket sales are now. Nothing huge, but my face was on all of them because it was on TikTok. And the first expo I went to, I just kind of went anonymously and had a good time. And then the last one I went with some friends. It was right before I left New York. And it was like being a very minor celebrity. Like I wouldn't even say celebrity necessarily, but I had people going, oh my God, Kit, thank you so much for telling me where the tickets were. And I was like, oh my God, nice to meet you. Like, what's your name? And it was the people I was with who I just teach with were like, what is happening right now? And I was like, I make videos on TikTok about like finding stuff. And I had a couple people that I helped get their tickets, like, cause Joe Quinn had visa issues, so he couldn't get there on Friday. So I walked people through the process of here's where you need to go to trade your tickets then. And like I had a couple other fans who were like, let me buy you something. And I was like, I do not need that. Like, but it was like they wanted to say thank you. And it was like this weird little gesture.
That's cool.
It was lovely. Like they're great people. But then also the Fan Expo people, because I was helping someone else with tickets, I was getting a picture with Hayden Christensen, and then his panel was going to start, but I needed to be in the front row for the panel. I had paid for it, but I couldn't be in two places at once. And I just casually said to like one of the people, I was like, hey, like, how does this work? Like, how? And they're like, oh my God, you've been so helpful this weekend. I'll just go put some stuff on your seat. I was like, okay, great. Thank you so much. And then that was the last Fan Expo I went to. And that kind of like weird minor celebrity status went away. But I could not just walk through the expo hall. Like there was no quickly hopping in line. It was such a weird, it was nice. It was fun, but I could not imagine that being my everyday. Like I had to be on the whole time, like headphones off, ready to talk to people. Like it was like being on stage for 12 hours straight. I couldn't do it every day. It was crazy. True. Super fun. Loved everyone I met, but holy cow, I could not imagine if that was my life.
I would definitely have probably multiple houses where I could
get
away. Because I am definitely that, the introverted extrovert, they say, where you like, you know, I love being around people, but then when I'm around people for a while, I need to be home for like an entire day by myself.
Anybody.
Because my energy is
for
just,
sure. Yeah. I feel that.
My thing with having multiple houses is I've actually had this conversation. It's like, what if your favorite pair of jeans is in a different house and you want that pair of jeans? That is like, I just think that would be such a struggle because, you know, there's just times when I want this particular pair of pants or this pair of shoes and I don't want anything else. And my kids were like, well, just, I think we had that conversation when we were all delirious after we saw Joe Jonas, so we were exhausted and been in the sun for 3 hours. And I was like, but what if, you know, they're like, you just have people who overnight them to you. I'm like, but I want them now to wear them now. So that's always, that's my biggest problem. I have to go home and pack for our trip in a few minutes.
I would have to buy duplicates. Duplicates, or I would have just a travel suitcase, a carry-on that goes with me everywhere with like my favorite items. Okay. I think we talked about the importance of being responsible for your own success.
That was all tied together.
Yes. Right. And that. So fake dating. Is it really ever fake?
No. Because you gotta have some kind of connection ahead of time.
I did like this like fake dating scenario though, because, and I a little bit wish we had gotten Parker's perspective on it because we know Elle remembers. We know she very distinctly remembers what happened in that stairwell and has been like hating him from like love, hate, like I hate how much I like him, hating him from afar.
Yes.
But the flip side, and I think Parker kind of like acknowledges this later on, is that he also remembers and has been like pining after her. And he is so famous that she can like spend hours like reading everything about his life, but it's only the shit he puts out publicly. So it's not really the real him. It's like fluff stuff or business stuff. And then he is like desperately trying to find her online and can't find anything. And it's driving him up the wall. So I would love to see like his side of it, where he was like opened the door and she was just there.
Did he freak out when he saw her and was like, oh my God, it's her.
Like, did he go back into his apartment like, no shit, what do I do? Like, and then orchestrates this fake dating situation as a way to like get with her. Like, I think he was like, this is advantageous to everyone, but also I really like you. Like, you're very cute. Like, I just imagine him like losing his mind behind the scenes on the regular.
Yes. Same.
I don't know. Sometimes I guess it's the cynic in me. It's like, and that's one of my problems with the ending with the 18-month breakup. I mean, when think about him, he's successful. He's attractive. He's got all kinds of money. Is he really going to pine so much for somebody for that long? Or is he going to? That's what I struggle with sometimes. I guess
the romantic in me says yes.
The cynic in me says.
She's his soulmate, and no matter what,
But 18 months can change you so much, though.
So much. Yeah.
I understand like a month, 2 months maybe, but 18 months just seems like that was hard to believe that they were still in that same place after 18 months. But that's the cynic in me.
I think they had to change. I think that's kind of the point for the breakup. And I 18 months, 1 year, like what the length of it is kind of a moot point for me personally. But I think the point was they had to separate and they both had to change. They both had some big realizations to come to in order to come back together and make it work, because it was not working the way they were doing it. And it wasn't like, it wasn't just one of them that needed to change and have some realizations. They both needed to have time and space and figure out like, what the fuck am I doing with my life? Like, I like this person enough that I'm willing to reflect a little bit on my own behavior and my own choices and come out of it better. And then come back together.
I do like too, that like, it wasn't fake for either of them very long. Like, they both kind of made it evident, like, this is really not fake. I really like this. And instead of it being fake dating, oh, wait, just kidding, it's not at the end of the month or whatever. It's like, it's within a few weeks that she's right there. And then we learn, of course, later that for Parker, he was like, really was fake dating. So I do like
that. I also like
that
it's like,
so it's not ever that really fake.
If we're like talking strictly tropes, like, we have the forced proximity, obviously. But from Elle's perspective, enemies to lovers. From Parker's perspective, friends to lovers. To answer the chance, because he's never not liked her.
Right. I was waiting for them to actually go to the Hamptons. when I read that he's like, it's going to culminate in a weekend at the Hamptons. I was like, one bed. One bed there. So that was funny. Elle's relationship with her dad, how it really impacts how she views Parker. Is it fair?
I think it's unavoidable. I don't think there's any way that they could have, that wasn't going to be like a collision course. And I think it's unfair to Parker a little bit that like he didn't have a chance to prove who he was first. Mm-hmm. But I think it's totally fair for Elle to view people that way. Like she came by it honestly. Like the reason she views people with money from that perspective, the reason she really does not trust Parker, I think all of that is incredibly fair and like incredibly valid, especially since she was willing to step away and be like, oh, I might be the asshole here. Yeah. Like,
I don't know if I'd use the word fair, but understandable.
Yes.
You know, because I don't think it's fair to judge somebody according to somebody else's behavior, but understandable if that's what you've dealt with all your life, that you're definitely going to get your hackles up and you're going to, you know, expect the same behavior. You know?
Yeah. I as much as we don't like to think this is true, I feel like women can't deny that their relationship with their father, good or bad, relationship or no relationship, does shape your future relationships with a husband or a boyfriend. Now, it could be like whether, and I think people might argue, but they really, even if you're, if your father's absent, that still gives you an idea of what a man is supposed to be in a relationship or whatever. And I think that she sort of unfairly puts the way her dad behaved toward her onto any future partner that she would have.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And that's just what we do. I mean, guys do the same thing with their mother. It's whatever, good relationship, bad relationship. It's your first experience of a relationship and seeing how two people interact. And it's heavily influences you. I think most psychologists
100%. And even seeing like with her parents breaking up and seeing how that all played out and how her mother's kind of relationship with who the father was, and then the father being kind of like absentee. She views that as like, well, that's inevitable. If we have this kind of disconnect with the money in particular, that's an inevitable ending that I can't avoid. So bother.
Mm-hmm. It's like children of divorced parents. How many of them just assume, well, I might get married, but it'll just end in divorce because that's what they see. And it's not always true.
Now, one thing I found really interesting, completely off this particular topic, was weren't the parents immigrants? And then was that successful? Yes. And I thought that was really interesting, especially in today's political climate, to have somebody who became that wealthy as an immigrant. I thought it was really positive representation, you know, even though he was kind of an asshole. But
I will say, missed moment, I thought, because I like did a double take when I read that both her parents were immigrants from Colombia.
Oh, okay.
And as you may or may not remember, my husband is from Colombia.
Right.
So I like love it. And especially I think now that our girls are getting older, we love anything that talks about Colombia, because for so long it was coffee and drugs. And we like to focus on, like, I love the movie Encanto because it's Colombia. And I was like, I would have loved more of the, I had no idea that her, she was a child of immigrants until literally the book was almost done. And she's like, well, both my parents came from Colombia. And you're like, wait, what? And then she makes a comment about her mother making arepas with her. And I was like, that's so
specific,
like a Colombian thing. And I just was like, oh, I would have. And I think that part is just me having raising two girls that are half Colombian and then half everything that I am.
It also, like, aside from that, would have been an interesting kind of thread. And we get to the point where there's like so many interesting things you could put in that there's not enough time.
Yeah.
But I do think, like, if we're going to like extrapolate a little bit, that being the child of immigrants and being successful, like, that plays into it as well. Like, she doesn't, do you want that to be your whole identity? Like, she's staying anonymous for a ton of different reasons. And I think some of it is a bit of that, like, immigration story. And she alludes to it in like one tiny, and you're like, oh, okay. So that's a piece.
Yeah. Yeah.
Interesting to see how they cast the movie.
Yeah.
If they're going to take that into consideration or not.
It's a small
piece.
It's
such
about Alex Astor. Is she, like, what nationality is she? Because she, I was looking at her book and
she's,
I was like,
dark hair, dark eyes. Yeah.
She could 100% be Colombian. Like, that's, she's gorgeous. But in today's world, you never know anymore. Sometimes
she's
people don't look.
Colombian American author. She is.
Is she really? Oh, I love her even more now.
And I guess she has a bunch of YA novels.
She does have several YA.
This is her.
Light Lark is her. I have a student who was reading that series.
She has
Light Lark.
It's been on the bestseller list for like a couple of like a year.
This is her first.
She has a middle grade series called Emblem Island. That when I picked this book up, I was like, that name is so, like, why is this name familiar? Because I had it on the shelf at the middle school library. And I was like, oh, yeah. I had a bunch of her books. I just didn't, I wasn't putting them together because, like, different genres.
Yeah. I personally am very into, too, if the author is not white. I like having their cultural experience put into it. So I read Elena Ramos. She wrote The Long Game, The Spanish Deception. And she's a Hispanic author. And so her main characters are very much Hispanic. And I love that. I love that culture influence. And so I was almost just kind of shocked in this when it felt thrown in there. And I was like,
more of that.
I want more culture. I want more of that. I want to know about it. I thought it was cool. Being married to a Colombian, I think part of it is because my husband was adopted. And so he has a very American culture. And as he's gotten older and as we've had kids, he's been more interested Colombian culture and learning more because he was adopted at, like, I don't know, 3 months old, 6 months old, something like that. So he's didn't like come speaking Spanish or anything like that. He just.
Well, if you want to get into her, that middle grade series, it's not like explicitly, if I remember correctly, it's not like explicitly set in Colombia because it is a fantasy series, but it's heavily influenced, and like the mythology involved is very woven through. So it's one of those where, like, you can kind of tell where the influences are, even though it's not like very, because they live in Emblem, like, it's not Colombia.
But Emblem, that's like when Encanto came out, and of course my girls were much younger, they were super excited about it. And Encanto, like, in Spanish, it doesn't just mean magic, but I can't remember what it really means. But Colombia, it's very different.
Yeah.
Like, Encanto is actually a thing. So the fact that he named it Encanto wasn't just because it was a Hispanic word. And I kind of thought that was funny. And a lot of the stuff, like the outfits and the drawings on the buildings in that movie were very specific to Colombia. Very specific. So that's one of our travel goals. Yeah. Paul wants to go back someday.
Oh, cool.
So... Someday we'll make it there.
Right. Rolling on.
Okay. Yeah, we did talk about anxiety a little bit and her anxiety. Repainting the memories. I liked how he made it that way.
That
way.
Very few things that I went. Like, I wasn't. I gave me pause that part. What did you like about it?
I like the idea that if something has a bad memory behind it, that you have something good happen there so that you can kind of move on, I guess.
I think I'd agree with Sarah on that. I think that's,
That part, and I think it was maybe the way he said it came across, like the way I read it, like kind of flippant, like, oh, it's simple. We'll just make new memories, like kind of downplaying like that she felt trauma as part of the city. And he was just like, it's fine. We'll just make new memories. Like that is kind of how I read it. I was like, dude, it's not that easy. Like, you can't just like get the other memories don't disappear.
Yeah. It's not
the
easy.
The way I read it was him kind of like,
it's not easy.
Oh, I can fix this too. We'll just make new memories and it'll be great.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Really? Sir?
Yeah. I mean, I could see your point too, Kip, but at the same time, I mean, think about something maybe, you know, maybe somebody tells you they hate your part of the world, and you say, well, let me just show you all the really cool things, you know, like whether it's, if you came to Florida and you say, well, I hate Florida. So, well, let me just show you this cool,
the fun
store,
things,
this,
there.
Cute, this really nice restaurant, and hope that maybe if it's something that I love, I can get you to at least like it more than you did.
I'm
before.
A very much a, you know, like, so I can, just personality wise, like if bad shit has, I just don't go back. Like you could say, like, obviously I love Florida, so like that's like a midpoint. But there's been a couple of times where we've had like bad experiences on vacations and stuff, and that's it. I just won't go back. Like, I just won't go back. Like, I'll find something. I'd rather go find something else to do. Like, make new memories with me. Let's make memories that are just me and you.
Right.
We don't need to like repurpose, especially since he doesn't really live there either. Like, neither of them are like, he's in San Francisco. Like, take me to San Francisco. Let's make memories there. Me, I was like, oh, you don't really need to erase the bad memories. Like, just go make new memories and it'll be great with something different. Uh-huh. Very like,
but it's New York. I mean, and you gotta love New York.
I will say, okay, let's say this without being too personal. Somebody getting married in a church that previously the church only held bad memories.
Mm.
That kind of thing. Like funerals. Like, if all you've ever seen in this church is funerals, and then you choose to get married, that to me is like, now you can go by that church and not think of the bad things. You can think of the good
things.
No,
that makes sense. Right. Yeah, for sure.
That makes sense. That's kind of where I'm
I agree. That's like 100% a thing that you can kind of change those kind of memories. Yeah. I just, the way you said it. Like, and I think that's what gave me pause more than anything. I was like, ooh, like, it's not that easy. Stop it. Stop it, you. Like,
Yeah. I think, and we'll get to this, I'm sure, when we talk about the locations, but I felt like a lot of the places they went to weren't the uber popular things.
Right.
So that, in a good way, if she had bad feelings about the super popular things, then, okay, so let's go to the other things, and I'll show you what else is here. So that's kind of cool. Okay, this ending.
I agree. I don't know who put it there, but I agree. Too rough.
Put it there. I put it down because I know that you guys had talked about it.
That's what I was. I mean, I was going for like 5 stars all the way through, and then I dropped it down to like 4.5, only because I, same sort of thing. I felt it was.
I would have liked the. And again, I don't mind like the 18-month time jump, but for the fact that I want to know what you were doing. Like, you're making me. Coming back.
Right.
Yes.
What happened?
Like, I know the
change?
Mom's letter, which I put down in the quotes, was like a big impetus for her, but like, I want more of that. So for me, it just felt like it was rushed, because when you're reading a book like this, I would say 99% of the time, you know how it's going to end. We know they're coming back together. We know he's bought that house. She's going to get it. And so it's the journey to get there. That's the fun part. And I felt like the jump while like, okay, fine. You're apart and you're making changes. It's great. But, and then it was just like, oh, okay, well, I'm going to buy the house and we're going to give this another go. And I was like, adorable, but also, I just thought it was too fast to get to that happy ever after.
Apparently though, too, if a book is classified as a romance, they have to have a happily ever after. Otherwise it becomes women's fiction.
I didn't reference it because I cannot think of the title, but I read, it's definitely a romance. There is a happily ever after, but it is not who you think she's going to happily ever after with. And that was read it probably during COVID. I like plowed through so many books, but I remember being like, like, who, him? What? And then, like, and then you went back and you saw all these little threads where like you could see how she ended up with him. but you thought you were having the happy ever after with like the guy with the forced proximity and like all of these classic tropes. You were like, of course they're going to end up together. And then she ends up with the other guy and you just went, no way.
But it still ended happily.
It did not end on a downer note. I think in the review I wrote something like, it's not the ending I wanted, but it's the ending the characters needed. And I was like, so it was so good. But I think with this book, we all knew where it was going to end. And then it's
kind of, absolutely. I mean, just the color of the cover. I'm sorry. You knew it was going to be
so happy. So I'm torn. I didn't necessarily think the ending was too rushed. However, speaking from personal experience, having written one of my books, I did this in, and it's because I didn't know what else to write.
You're like, we got to get there somehow.
and I have long felt, even though it was out there in the world for several years, that I wish I don't know. The ending when I wrote it felt rushed, but I didn't know what else to do to make it not feel drawn out.
Right.
It's my horse one.
I love both your books. They're on my shelf.
So the end, like, I just feel like, because she leaves him, but then it's like a chapter later, she's like, I can't do this. I'm going back. Right. Now, it's not 18 months, but still. And then the other part of me, when I was thinking of this as I finished it, I was like, so I think her point of view is that the story is them falling in love. Not them coming back together. But it also is a very short book and you could have had that be the other part. But would it have taken the fun part out? Like it would have been too much of a Debbie Downer to be
so
like,
sad.
Oh, they're alone and they're miserable. And we're going to talk about this for 100 pages before we bring them back. I mean, I guess I'm like, what's your point in the story? If your point was this is the summer and they're falling in love, then it kind of makes sense to end it and then come back together. I would like to know what
they're doing. Interested in how this plays out as a movie because I think it does give a little more, like, obviously we tend to cut a lot of things out when we're going from books to movies, but it also does allow, like, you could fucking montage that 18 months and give us so much context into what both of them are doing in 5 minutes.
It'll just give you that visual of this is what they're doing and showing that they're successful, but then like looking longingly or even out like, the window, like they're realizing I'm not quite.
So I see her see like double checking, like even if we're talking just about the house, like her checking a fucking Zillow listing multiple times and then him getting notifications and it's not her. And they're like, not for sale, not. And then one pings and it's her. And he's like, yes, this is the one. Yep. Mm-hmm. Like,
yes. And you get some of those moments for her,
but
you don't get any of those moments for him, for Parker, because you get the whole when she has to go through the storage unit and she starts seeing parts of her past, but you never get that.
And I'm blanking on the sister's name. I think I forget what her name is, but it starts with a C, I think, right?
Oh my gosh, what's her name?
Callie?
Callie.
Yeah.
I think
the movie we'll get a little more from the sister, just a little more context, even if it's just, you know, we only get Al's perspective, like when she's talking on the phone or FaceTime with her sister. I think we'll get a little more, and I think that relationship will like fill in some blanks here and there. That would be nice.
Because their conversation they finally have is super important when Callie's like, I just decided I wanted a parent that was present. And even after their mom died and it was like, I know that he's giving me money, but at least I have a parent instead of pretending I don't have any. And I was like, wow, that's a very interesting way to look at it. I think Callie does mind that intrusion into her life with the money where it is transactional. And Callie is like, it's okay if he's part of my life, where Elle wants nothing to do with it. She does not want a transactional relationship. She doesn't want to feel in debt to anyone. And Callie doesn't care. She sees it as, well, hey, I'm having fun. I'm spending money. And I think some people are like that, and that's okay. So more power to her.
Elle wants to pay for herself, but Callie doesn't have the same revenue stream. So she can't do for herself. And she also doesn't want to miss out on all those amazing things. So there is something to be said for that, that this is my way of paying for it. This is my way of doing the things.
And then you learn when Elle says, well, I thought you wanted to be a curator. That was your dream job. And she says it was my dream job, but it was never my dream. My dream was to have a family and be a mom. Mm. So to her, having this money come in from someone else, she's okay with it because she's like, now I can. It is helping me fulfill my dream because my dream is to have a family and now I can pay for it. Where Elle is like,
Right. And for Elle, the career was the first thing. Like the career was the first dream, family secondary. And I think for Callie, it's the opposite. Uh-huh. Like family first. Yeah. And I mean, I have a fucking degree in museum like curation and whatnot. How like to be able to, first of all, working is awful. Like no one wants to work. It's awful to have to like go with someone else's schedule. I imagine Callie like that is living the dream because you're not curating at a museum where everything's coming to you, but you are in New York, let's say. She's going to all these places and gets to see firsthand where these things were made and created, which if that's, if you're just like into it and you don't have to have the job to get the money, that has to be like the best.
Right. I don't think I would complain. So, we've got through some plot points and lots of good stuff, but there were definitely some quotes that stuck out to us.
The first one I did was the Twilight call out, obviously. Like I love the like context around it because it's Penelope and Elle talking, and Penelope's talking about like this, the guy that's like, might be a creeper stalker. But the quote is like, you know better than anyone that disturbing behavior is only really disturbing. And then the response is, if you don't think the guy is attractive, like if Edward watching Bella sleep in Twilight, like all things are forgiven if he's cute, I guess.
So true.
And I thought that was like a super funny line. I was like, obviously we get it.
That's
like,
funny. That's funny.
For sure.
I also wrote down, you wrote down this too. Do all books have maps? He asked. No, I say only the best ones. And I loved that one. I marked that one too. I was like, well, that's all of your Lord of the Rings.
I thought it was such a tongue-in-cheek by the author too, because this is the inside of the book.
Yes, because she has.
So like only the best ones do. Yeah. And I was like, oh, this one does.
Like, I like that.
So I thought that was like a little like either tongue-in-cheek or like a peek into like Alex Astor and what she likes in a book.
Right. Well, and her fantasy books, I wonder if they have maps in the
beginning. I bet you they do.
I'd have to go look, but they're in the library in New York. So not an easy peek. The next one that I put down probably would be better to save towards the end. So I'm going to skip past it because it's like a serious one. But I did the Parker saying, I didn't fall in love with a version of you, Elle. He said, I fell in love with every you. I love that because it felt like something she needed to hear, because he was being like an anonymous author and she was so concerned about people only liking her for what she could do for them, or like what she did for like the world with her movies, and him being like, no, I just like your personality. Like it's not, you know, what you're putting out there to the world. I just like you. And I liked that a lot.
My favorite, I felt like, was an ode to us bookworms all over. There's something peaceful about walking around a bookstore knowing endless worlds are waiting to be discovered, knowing there's always an escape if we need it, especially because Elle is not a reader. She talks about she can't read because she says what it's called when you can't see the picture in your head.
Oh, that's right. Yes.
That's the thing. And I tell my students that when they struggle, I go, you know, some of you don't see a movie in your head. And they're like, some will be like, yeah, you're right. And I'm like, other of
I
us,
love
it's
that
vivid.
Part of it because I've had this conversation with other friends when I first, I forget what the word for it is, where like, that there is, that it was on like Instagram for a while where it was like, if I say the word apple, what do you see? And some people see like very vividly a red apple and you're like, I see it on a tree. Like it's the apple orchard. And then I'm like putting people in it and like the tractors go by and other people are like, what do you mean? It's just a worm. Like, oh, okay.
Do you ever, is this just me? Do you ever go into a bookstore or a library and get anxious because you don't have enough time to read all the books you want to read?
Yes.
I feel that way a lot of times.
Sometimes I don't know what to get either because there's so many that I'm like, ooh, I wanted to read that. Oh, but then this one. So
I know. I just look around sometimes.
Overwhelmed.
I love to go into a bookstore. And even though I read exclusively on my Kindle anymore, I still love to go into bookstores and look around and see all the pretty covers and all the cool merchandise. But then sometimes I start thinking, oh my God, I wanted to read that and that and that. Yeah. And I don't have time to read them all.
Yes.
You know, Sarah, you skipped over one of the quotes that's there. And this one sounded like Kit wrote this one.
Yes.
It says, I hold grudges like security blankets. I treat everyone I meet like a thief, someone who will inevitably betray me if I'm dumb enough to let them inside
put it
my
down.
House. Oh, for some reason, that sounded...
That is exactly how I feel. A lot of...
She did.
Yeah. Like, I'm a fool me once.
Yes.
You know, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. Like, I hold grudges like it's my job.
Shame
and
on,
I'm not even hold grudges, but I'll cut you off real fast. Like, if you're, like, we're done here.
Yeah, right.
Definitely treat everyone like there's something to be suspicious. Yeah, for sure. And that's when I read that quote. I was like, oh, samesies. Like, me too. Glad to know we're all on the same page. I was like, but that's, and I think it's actually a bigger quote. Let me see if I can pull the whole quote. But that was the part that I was like, oh, yeah, me too, friend. Me too. Same.
I like how it's written, actually. Like, that's the other thing, too, just the way the word choice, the way it's put together is like, that's a good
I didn't
metaphor.
Put the second part of it in because the second part did not resonate the same way. So the second part of it, it's after the, they will inevitably betray me if I'm dumb enough to let them inside my house. So I resist change. Like, if I sit solidly in place and keep everything around me very still, nothing new will come through the net I've cast around my little life. And that means nothing can hurt me. Not anymore. Never again. Which I do the opposite. Okay. So I seek out change. So if I'm the one that chooses to leave, you can't do it.
Right.
So the second part of it didn't resonate quite the same way, but it is still a very good quote.
My other favorite, because I know you're saving your one for the end, which I think is important. And this one resonated with me a ton because of the whole themes and motifs of the book. When Penelope says to Elle, you are more obsessed with money than anyone I've ever met, and you are letting the love of your life get away because of it. Because I don't think she realized how obsessed with money she was.
Yeah. Right. But in a different way.
In a different way. And I was like, wow, that's real.
And it's like, you just said, Ma, it's a different way of being obsessed with money. Because she was viewing it only as like, well, obsessed with money is you're having it and you're throwing it around and like this, you know, you're using it for these purposes. But still controlling all of her thoughts.
Well, like those quotes I said before, money is the root of all evil, and the lack of money is the root of all evil.
Yep.
Same idea is, having too much money is the root of all evil, and, being obsessed with people who have too much money is the root of all evil,
And what that means in your life and all that, and that's where I think Penelope really kind of showed her, like, okay, I get what you're saying, but this guy really loves you, and he's just trying to give you things to make you happy. And you're obsessed with him.
I thought Penelope was like, I'm super excited to see how she plays out in the movie because she's like a real friend.
Yeah.
And I did like, this is an aside, I did like that on Penelope's kind of like very blunt say-so of like, you have to get out there and meet people, that Elle was able to make these new friends with people that she probably would not have interacted with otherwise. But she did Penelope was like, do the thing, girl, like go make a friend. And she was able to do it. And I did like that a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the last quote I put in there was the note from the mom, because I thought that was, you've got Penelope kind of in real life giving her hard truths. And then I think this happens with a lot of people, along the way, is that you have what you believe is a person, like it's a person, but like how you believe a person was based on your memories, and her mom's not there to change the memories. So she has a very distinct, concrete opinion on what her mom believed and what her mom wanted. And then when she reads the note, she's like, oh, shit, like there's more to it than what I've been holding on to. So the mom's note saying, my little lion, don't be one of those writers who saves all the best lines for their characters. Say them yourself. Don't save the best stories for screenplays. Live them. Life isn't a movie. There's never just one start or ending. There is always a chance to begin again. Which I think is essentially what Penelope is saying as well.
I like that a lot.
But hearing it from her mom in like a, you can't just live life on the page. Yeah. You got to go live it. Was huge for Elle, and I really liked that.
My favorite quote of all time that I say all the time is George Eliot, and it is, it's never too late to be what you might have been. Mm. I tell that to my students all the time. I said, it just means that you could do something for 10 years and go, I don't want to do this anymore. Then do something else.
Yeah,
it's never too late for you to change your mind and do something. And that's kind of like what her mom is telling her too, You can start over again. You can start something and go,
like,
this
I think
isn't what I want.
Kicking herself for like how she reacted to Parker.
Yeah.
And it's okay. Yeah. Yep. It's fun.
She thinks she can't go back, but you kind of can a little bit. The one thing I should know this better, because I'm super intrigued by this. She talks at one point about using the save the cat method for screenwriting,
okay.
which is a real thing. Yeah. I teach a film class and I don't really touch on it, but it is, she talks about a three-act structure. You save the cat is the three-act structure. And I wanted to look it up to get the actual parts. Cause like I said, I know it's there, but I don't teach it. Because I kind of wonder if the book does the three acts. Yes.
Probably does.
So I'm super curious about it because I can't remember. And maybe that's one of the reasons that it got optioned for a movie right away, because
I also
they were
like
this follows perfectly would make a perfect movie.
It's a book about a movie, which is going to become a movie about a book about a movie. Like I like, there's like so much happening. and I was like, oh, okay. Like I got you. I'm trying to look up the Save the Cat structure.
I know.
Me too.
I barely taught it. And I'm like, God, I'm a bad film teacher because I probably should teach that to my kids.
So this is, I found one graphic. I don't know how accurate it is, but we're going to roll with it. So the act one, so it's the three act structure. The act one would be your opening image, your setup, make sure your theme is obvious. There's a catalyst and then there is a debate, which I think we have that because the setup is at the nightclub. The catalyst is like, oh shit, we've moved in next to each other. Yep. And then the debate would be her like going to Penelope, like, what the fuck do I do in this situation? And then act two is you introduce some of the B story, which is making the movie and also Parker's issues. Fun and games, which could be visiting all the locations, which we're going to talk about in a second. Bad guys close in, which would be, you know, the dad shows up. Parker is betrayed by a friend. And then all is lost, which is they have their little breakup there over the fact that this, all of the, I bought the jewelry store. Like I'm with Elle on that one. Like you did what now? And then the dark night. So they're separated and sad. Act three is breaking into act three where you're coming back together. A resolution is on the horizon. And when they meet again, And then the finale is, in this case, the happy ever after. It gives like your options of what kind of a movie you're making. And then you have whatever your final image is. So I think it does follow it.
Yeah. It's similar to what you teach with writing, but Save the Cat's a little different. Because the other thing I remember too, that the Save the Cat is you have to give your protagonist something good to do early on that makes the audience like them. Which would be like saving the cat. That's why they call it the save the cat mode. It's interesting because I teach it briefly in film history as more as like when this book came out, this Save the Cat, it changed film writing and you get a lot more formulaic films because of it, but also more enjoyable to the audience.
In my head, I was like, oh, I bet it follows whatever the formula was. But what's killing me about it right now in a good way is I'm on this website. And it's talking about the creator of the Save the Cat story structure is a guy named Blake Snyder, a speculative screenwriter. Great.
Yep.
His credits include the movie Blank Check and 5 episodes of my own personal favorite TV show from when I was a child, Kids Incorporated.
Seriously?
I was like, no way, dude. I love your work.
It's because he made a ton of money selling the book. Yeah. He made his name.
So
for
he,
himself.
Yeah, and That's it's what the he's framework known. Comes from the movie Aliens because the cat disappears. But, you know, Blank Check,
Save
cool. Kids Incorporated, though. I grew up on that show. Like, all right, dude. I can sing the whole theme song if we need it.
Yeah, that's so funny.
Not going to, but I could. Like, what a random collection of credits there.
Exactly.
Yep.
All right. Are we ready to talk about food?
Yeah.
I am.
For sure. What's everyone's favorite food from this one?
The pizza. Hands down. So I'm
although I do love a good cannoli.
I know. I was reading this last night. It was probably 10:30 at night. And the way
so
she was
hungry.
Describing the pizza, my mouth started watering. Like,
oh,
literally,
that's funny.
I'm like, God, it's like 10:30, 11 o'clock at night. And I just want a good piece of pizza now.
I didn't live in New York City, but I lived in Syracuse, New York. So New York style pizza, right? It took us almost 18 months here in Colorado to find a good New York style pizza. I was like desperate. Like, I was asking everyone, like, where could I find? We did find one that's like right. It's like 5 minutes away. It's called Pulcinella's. Right. It's amazing. But like, as they're visiting all these places, I'm like, oh, pizza, like pizza, So good
pizza. Marianne, do you remember we did this? And I totally forgot about it until we were reading. When we were in Chicago, might have been for the Pride run read that we did, and we wanted to find the best Chicago. And so we had four.
Okay.
We did Gino's East. We did Giordano's.
Oh,
we did Paisano's.
We went to Luminati's. No, we only went.
Or was it you and I did it? I don't remember. One of us, it was in Chicago, and I was like reading it going, oh my God, we've done this. Like we had different pizza every night.
We met up with Stacy, I think, right?
Stacy,
I don't want to say her last name. I don't know if she wants. But you know what? We met up with her and we went
to
we went to Luminati's.
Did we have Luminati's or Gino's? Yeah. Yeah. I think it's when Marianne did the Pride race and you couldn't come. Yeah. You were going to come to that. And so we did the Pride race and we had pizza the first night. And then the next night we were like, what else should we have? And then it was like, let's just have pizza again. Like, oh, well, we had Luminati's. Let's have this. And it was like, so when I'm reading that part in the book, I was just going, oh my God, this is amazing.
And
like, we've literally done this.
I was thinking about all the pizza places in New York City. And then I started thinking about all the other good food in New York City. Like there's an Italian restaurant in Little Italy called Umberto's that has like the best homemade pasta, which has nothing to do with the pizza.
Yeah.
Do you have a favorite pizza place, Marianne, or a favorite restaurant?
We went to a place for last time we were there in Little Italy called Paisano's, and I'm ready to go back. I'm going back to New York in September, so I'm super excited to go back. So
I wonder if it's the same. Is it deep dish or is it New York style?
Well, this isn't the pizza we had. It was pasta, but it was Italian. So
okay, because Paisano's in Chicago, everyone loves Gino's. Everyone loves Giordano's. I love Paisano's. That was my favorite. Was Paisano's. And
I think
it's
that
the
was
lesser known.
I think that's because I went to Gino's.
But I wonder if it's a chain and they have pasta there too.
I think I like Paisano's best. The way they ate them all in one day, I was like, how did they do that without exploding? Oh my God.
Well, then she throws up. Yeah. So I'm like, okay, yeah, she throws up. That makes sense. And we talked about, we didn't talk the bakery though, the scones.
Oh, yes. And that was super cute.
I thought that was a really nice song. Mm-hmm. Insight into like his actual personality, because he does throw his money around and like he's like, I just bought the bakery because I want you to be able to have these blueberry scones. We were so sad and upset, but he still like what was the like barista's name, Jeremy? He like still like deferred to Jeremy as like the expert in the situation. Like, I've bought it. I would like to have blueberry scones every day. But if you want to make other stuff, so then Jeremy, it was only referenced like one time where Jeremy was making new flavors of things. Yeah. So like he buys it, but it's not for like his own kind of glory. And like, it's, I'm going to make sure you have your scones and we're going to let Jeremy just like do his thing.
But he recognizes that's not his skill set. Yeah. So, okay, I'm going to let somebody else.
And I also have like
this.
A deep affinity for just like a good, like hometown bakery or restaurant where you come like you're a regular. And I like that, like, you know, she found her spot.
Yeah.
I'm going to be a regular. And she was excited when he remembered her order when she walked in that time. And he was like, you're regular. We had a bit of time when I was in Syracuse where my friend and I would go to the gym in the morning and then we'd go to breakfast. And the time we walked in, the chef's name was Mikey. When Mikey was like, oh, you want your regular girls? There was a couple places where we were regulars
that
we didn't have to order. That was a nice, fun feeling. So I liked that was like pointed out.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh. Right. How about those locations?
There's a couple places, even though I've been to New York more times than I can count, a couple of places like Gramercy Park, I didn't know anything about, which I thought was really interesting. So I definitely want to check it out. And I think Little Island is pretty new. One of my students was telling me about it because one of our programs takes a trip to New York every year and they were going, I guess it's all made out of like reclaimed materials.
And I looked it up. I was reading the book and was like, what is this? And I was lost on Google for like 20 minutes looking at pictures.
Yeah.
It's really cool looking.
Yes.
I had no idea either about it.
And I've never been to the Cloisters. I've stayed up near there, but I've never been to it. So
I didn't know about the High Line either.
I've been on the High Line.
Yeah. That's like I said, I feel like they obviously went to Central Park, but they didn't really mention a specific place other than by a fountain, but there's a lot. And so I kind of appreciated, even though it's been years since I've been to New York City, a lot of the places they went to were kind of not the normal
right
places that tourists think of.
And that's the thing about Central Park is it's so crazy when you go to New York, and especially if you go up in like a high rise overlooks uh-huh. it, and you see how big it is compared to the yeah. city. And there's so many little pieces of it that you could uh-huh. like, it's like one of those places that you could explore for so long and never see uh-huh. all of it. You know, yeah. so that's one thing about Central Park I've always loved.
Yeah.
I've never been to Yankee Stadium either, but that's because yeah. my dad was a Mets fan and I was would not have been allowed to go there. So
is Battery Park at like the tip and yes. you can see Ellis Island from it yes. and there's the chessboards. Yes. That's where people play.
Yes.
Okay. And, I've been there.
And the carousel is the carousel that they're talking about. Isn't it the one with
okay,
the.
Okay. Is near there.
Which carousel? Is the one with like the sea lions, or not sea lions, the sea creatures,
sure.
or is it the carousel?
No, they didn't say that. It looks like it's across
a map.
Like across a bridge from Gramercy, I mean, from Battery Park.
Across a bridge?
Like if you look at the map.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah.
There's
so
like
it's
a little, because she's got the illustrations.
Much pizza. It's the carousel is near the bookstore in Brooklyn, it looks like.
Yeah,
Carousel in Brooklyn.
Oh, so it's in Brooklyn. Okay.
So Carousel in Brooklyn. Okay. Oh, yeah.
Then I'm not familiar with that carousel, but yeah. there is a carousel in yeah. Battery Park though that has like sea creatures that you sit okay. on rather than horses.
This one did talk specifically horses. Yeah. Oh, and yeah, it's this one because it's glass enclosed.
Okay.
Now that I'm looking at the map, I'm like remembering other things too. Like what I really liked because there's the botanical garden. And he says, this might not be while they're at the botanical garden, but like,
yep.
he says something about buying her flowers. And she's like, no, because they just right. die, which is exactly how I feel about flowers. But then he was like, well, we could plant mm-hmm. a garden. Yep. He was like, we can have the beauty, but, you know, without you having to like keep it alive in a vase. I was like, oh, like, okay, you listen. I got you.
Right.
You're paying attention.
uh-huh. So apparently that carousel must be Jane's Carousel, which is in Brooklyn Bridge Park. Yeah, so it's not like
and I did
Coney
like
Island or something. It's
that
right
they
the
mentioned
bridge.
Early on that the, you know, the movie within the book has secured the rights to film at these very specific places. And I did, we've talked about it a little bit already, that they're not the big touristy destinations, which does make it like, you know, it's a love story between Elle and Parker, but it's also a bit of like a love letter mm-hmm. to New York and not the like the places that everyone
yes.
knows.
Oh, absolutely.
So it'll be interesting if they keep, I hope they keep that for the actual movie.
And newer places, because this looks newer.
Yeah.
New carousel. Yeah. And then you also have Little Island mm-hmm. also looks newer. I like that. It did make me want to go. It's been years since yeah. I've been in New York. I mean, I was a kid when I've been downtown New York City. I've flown into New York, flown over the city a few times, but yeah.
The last several times I've been to New York have been like really, really quick trips. So there's not a lot of exploring happening. Like we go in and we see a show. Or, you know, we went to the Green Bay Packers game when they played the Jets, I think. We went when they played the Giants too. But so you're staying in New Jersey, but like you go in and go, like I went and saw Moulin Rouge and had dinner. Like, so there wasn't like a lot of like exploring happening. And I was like, oh, right. I forgot how much fun it is to like spend the time to explore.
Yeah.
Future
Reedy
Travel
love,
Repeat
yeah.
podcast yeah. adventure.
Same. I would love to.
Yeah. Yes, for sure.
I know. I feel like we need to go to these places we read about. And then of course, after New York City, there's Paris.
Which is
like,
very cliche, but also yeah. very cute.
Yes.
Yes. I did love some uh-huh. of the places they talked about though in Paris. I love that they went to the Rodin Museum.
Uh-huh.
Because my yeah. husband's been to Paris and he said that he loved yeah. that museum. It's one of the favorites. And you know, yeah, you could go to the Louvre, but
yeah.
the Louvre is crazy and there's people all over.
Right.
Why not go to the Rodin Museum, which is a little further out? And it's just
and I also
beautiful.
Liked that it was, if we're talking about like story arcs a little bit, because she was pissed off at him. But then he was like, I will get you to your sister. Like I can do, let me do this for you. And then they kind of come back together and have their little Paris moment. But at, like when they were in the museum, he's like, he's trying, man. Like, it feels like it's not his thing, but he's like, we're going to do this. Like, we're going to go to a museum and look at the art. And it also gave like a couple, if I remember correctly, a couple little hints into more about Callie, because she's thinking about how like Callie would love this. And like, this was her jam.
Right.
Yeah. I did love that. And yeah. even though it was a little campy because it's pretty predictable to go to Paris, yeah. I still liked it, you know,
but
I still
not at all.
There's nothing wrong with predictable.
Okay. So our final thoughts?
Like I said, it took me a hot second to get into the book, but once I was in, I was all in. And I thought it was like a perfect, like just fun, flirty summer read. Like it balanced, and I thought it balanced the like serious stuff and emotions with the whole idea of like a summer fling. Like I thought it was really well put together and fun to read. And I really want to see it as a movie. Like I would like it to be out right now. I don't want to wait.
Same.
Yeah, I think you took the words out of my mouth. Yeah, absolutely. I thought it was a lot of fun. And I think it will make a cute movie, especially with all the locations, specific locations. Hopefully they stick to the book to a certain extent. I know they can't do it all the way, but hopefully it's not too big a change from the book. Yeah, I think it's going to be it was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed reading it.
I had, my notes were perfect beach read, summer romance, same thing. I loved it. Cannot wait to see it as a movie. Slightly open door, but not as much for anyone who maybe doesn't.
Right.
Is not quite. It wasn't like a super open door where you're like, wow, that's a lot.
Yeah.
But there's a few scenes, a few spice, a little bit of spice.
It wasn't like, oh, okay, now I'm reading like.
Right. Yeah.
But like.
That wasn't the focus.
Realistically, very attractive people living in very close proximity, you're gonna hook up.
Well, it's funny too. I was reading that I got to that part and I was thinking it wasn't a slow burn, even though they don't write about that till later, but because you just knew earlier that they were together, kind of. It didn't feel like a slow burn.
Oh, what's happening? But it's not like you're not getting, so like, you know it's gonna happen. They've already done it once.
Yeah.
Is when they're going to get there.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, no, so. it was definitely a fun read. I'm glad we picked it.
Yep. Perfect for summer. Yeah. Lots of conversation because we've been talking about this for a long time.
I know, right?
I was like, who knew a book like this?
It's a good one.
Yep. Sparks such good conversation.
Stuff coming up. We've got a lot of stuff already out. We got stuff coming up. Our next featured book for July is Morbidly Yours by Ivy Fairbanks. And we got a little something special for that one.
I'm excited. Yes.
We're cooking up something special with Ivy. So you got to stay tuned.
Absolutely.
For that one. And of course, if you enjoyed this episode, head to our profile, check out the other books that we have featured so far, including Twilight, Perfect Marriage, Lessons in Chemistry. And if you're looking for book recommendations, each month we share what books we've read across every genre. If you want to see what we look like and how crazy this podcast can get sometimes, we're also on YouTube now, so you can actually watch our recordings. So don't forget to check that out.
Don't forget to follow our socials, subscribe to the podcast, and please leave us a review. We want to know what you think.
And of course, let us know if there's a book you'd like to see us read or cover in the book club, because we love a good book recommendation.
Absolutely.
Always. So until next time, keep reading.
Keep exploring.
And don't forget to pack some snacks. Always. Food.
Always.
Yes.
Snack.